Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, look, you might not buy into what my next guest has to say, but I think you'll find it fascinating all the same. Lorna Byrne, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan. My pleasure to be here talking with you this morning.
And Lorna, people will remember your book, Angels in My Hair. It was a huge bestseller 15 years ago. It's been republished 15 years on. You were just saying to me that it's been a long time since you've done anything like this. So we'll ease into it. Before we start, can we establish, as far as you're concerned, who is in the studio right now? Are there angels here?
Yes, there's angels here and your guardian angel as well. Everyone has a guardian angel. And even when I look out there as well into the other studio, I see the angels in there. So we're not alone. And I think that's so important for people to remember that they have a guardian angel, that it's there with them all of the time. And it's, you know, the gatekeeper of your soul and helps you and guides you in as many ways as possible. But we do find it hard to listen. And I know people...
So you can see my guardian angel now.
It's normal for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like for you not being able to see. Yes, I see your guardian angel physically as I see you.
And what are you seeing?
How would I say, angels are light. It's just that they give a human appearance within that light. And your guardian angel at this moment is giving a male appearance. It looks like that to me, but it's neither male nor female.
Okay.
And it's just dressed in, I have to say, how would I describe the colour? You might say like a prune colour, reddy prune colour. It seems to be just dressed in all of that colour.
Would you read any significance into that?
No.
Okay.
No, okay. Not at all.
And does my guardian angel, is he communicating with you in any way? Or can you talk to him now? Or
well, if you want to ask me a question, and if your guardian angel answers it, I'll give you an answer. But I can't if it doesn't.
Okay. So, well, okay. Well, look, lot of people obviously are not going to believe this, and not sure I believe it myself, but I will be open-minded and go with it. Okay, so why don't you ask my guardian angel if my guardian angel feels that if he has ever felt in contact with me, or if he has ever felt he has done anything for me, or has he felt ignored for the last 50 years?
I have to smile because I'm being told your guardian angel has never felt ignored for all of your life.
Well,
even if you're
strange, doubtful
about it.
Yeah.
But your guardian angel is, how would I say, it's the gatekeeper of your soul. It has always been with you. That's how I know.
So my guardian angel feels listened to, does he?
Yes.
Really?
You've been taken maybe not all the guidance it's been given you, but some of it. And I think a lot of the time we kind of take some of that guidance. We know what we're meant to do, or we know where we should go. And other times we
So what we might think of as gut feeling, Lorna, you would say that is your guardian angel.
That's your guardian angel communicating you in that way. Yes.
How did you talk to my guardian angel there now?
I just talk like I'm talking to you, and I would say without words. Yeah.
Okay. How many angels are here?
There's your guardian angel and there's three other angels here as
well. Are the other angels who are here friends of yours? Some of your angel friends?
No, I think there are angels that must be in and around you at different times. Maybe your guardian angel has them in and around with you.
And why would that be? Why would there be other angels there as well?
No one has ever asked that question in that way. I would just see other angels. Other angels come and go.
Yeah.
But the guardian angel is always with you, so it never leaves you. Like even when I was outside, or, you know, just say I was in a cafe, I would see the guardian angel with everyone. But I would see other angels as well, like in and around. And I have never asked the angels, well, why are you in and around? But then again, sometimes I would see unemployed angels. And it's usually angels that, in a sense, maybe you are, what would I say? How can you explain it? You know, you're going through something, or you're worried about something, or you're kind of trying to make a decision, or you need help with someone, with something, and you have asked for this help, and okay. maybe unconsciously asked for it okay. as well.
Lorna, do you understand why I find this yeah. very hard to believe?
Yeah.
And so obviously yeah. my rational mind says, okay,
yeah.
either this lady is making this up, or believes it, yeah. but is kind of deluded in some way.
Yeah, I do understand. I would meet a lot of people and percenters like yourself as well, all over the world, that would feel the same. I think it is, in a sense, that it's really something maybe you have never thought of, or in a sense, what you've gone through in your life, you've kind of pushed that, you know, to one side. But I would always say, you know, you've nothing to lose by, in a sense, saying, well, what is there, you know, more to life in that way? And I think, you know, you have a soul, you're a beautiful person. You know, you do your best. And I know your show even helps people by listening to you, you know, so you're playing your part in the world. I don't mind anymore. At first, I used to say to God and the angels, you know, because I'm severely dyslexic, you know, writing this book, I kept saying no to God all my life, and even as a child.
Just to tell people, it was the angels told you to write this book originally.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know,
why did they do that? How do you see as your mission that you've been given by the angels?
I think my, if you want to use the word mission, is, you know, just giving the message of hope and love to the world, because we definitely need that, and reminding people to be the best person they possibly can be, and to be conscious that they're not alone, and they have a guardian angel there with them. And again, that, you know, when you lose a loved one, you know, even though they're gone physically, but they're there spiritually as well. No one dies as such. And I know you might find that hard to believe. It's just the human body that dies.
So our departed loved ones, are they with us in the sense that you see them as well?
On occasions, not all of the time. But on occasions, I would like the
and
first.
And what do you believe, that they come to us at particular times? Is it?
Yeah, I think in a sense they come to us when maybe we're really feeling down or bad in ourselves, or we're missing them so much, you know, because when we lose a loved one and we were close to them, you know, that can be a very stressful time. And the soul of the loved one comes in and around you. You have to remember, when you are close to someone that you have lost, you as a human being still feel the essence of them. And it's like someone would say to me, I could feel John or Murray, I could feel my child, I could feel my husband or my wife in the room with me just when I needed them.
Yeah, I suppose people kind of mean that metaphorically a lot, don't they? Or they meet as a form of, you know, magical thinking or something, that they conjure up the person to be there with them. Would you mean this quite literally?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do mean it literally. Like I would have people say to me, you know, I remember when my husband Joe died, and I would visit this lady down the country sometimes, and she would say to me, you know, on the odd occasion, she said to me, Lorna, I could smell the smoke in the room, and nobody smoked in our house. I could smell Joe's cigarette, you know. And she said she knew he was around because she was very close to him. And you would hear that from so many people.
Yeah,
you know,
and I can see how it's comforting for people. You also have visions. You mentioned Joe there. So you, long before you met or married Joe,
yeah,
you were given a vision.
Yeah, I was only about, 10 years of age, roughly. And I was out fishing with my dad, and the angels told me to go up along the river, that I had another angel to meet. And I don't know how far I walked up, but I saw this incredible angel walk across the water, across the river. And it was Angel Elijah. And me being 10, the first thing I said to this angel was, "Can I not do that?" And he said, "No." And I was very disappointed. And we just sat down on the ground. And he showed me the vision of the young man I would marry. It was like, what would you say, like a silk curtain. I'm always trying to describe it, across the river. And I could see this young man. And he could see he had red hair and everything like that. And I could see trees where he was walking. And, Angel Elijah said, "I would marry this young man. And we'd fall in love. We'd have children. We'd have ups and downs and all of that." And then Angel Elijah, at the age of 10, like, I was giggling even at this, fall in love. Didn't know really what he was talking about. And then he told me that, he would become sick and he would die and leave me a widow. And I always remember getting really annoyed with Angel Elijah when he said that. And it was like he said, he put his hand to the back of my head, so it went to the back of my mind. But I never forgot his words. And then the day I did see this young man, when I was working in the petrol station, and a big, huge window, and looking out, and I saw this young man walking up the road. And I remember getting very excited, nervous and afraid, because I knew it was him, and saying to the secretary that was sitting there at her desk, I said, "See that young man coming up the road? He's coming in here looking for a job." And I didn't want him to get it, because I was going to fall in love. This is what I was told, and we'd have ups and downs and we'd have children and he'd get sick. And I knew I could never tell him. I knew all of that. Because when you tell somebody something that you know of their life, that would stop them living their life. And the most important thing is that Joe would live his life to the fullest.
So you have to keep that secret from him all those years. Yeah. Now, you also, apart from angels, you believe you've encountered, there's at least one poltergeist encounter in the book. Mm. You also believe that you have been in the presence of Satan.
Yes, and that's the part I don't like talking about, to be honest with you. And that was when I was in Maynooth, and we were in the Cossage, and all of that happened. I would rather not talk about, because it's upsetting.
Okay. Well, on the other hand, then, you also have been in the presence of God. You describe what God looked like in a human form. What did he look like?
How would I say? Very handsome, in the sense of, dark skin. He gives, I believe God has given the appearance to me as, as what maybe he looked like when he was here on earth, in that way. But always looks dark hair, dark skin, and the eyes are like brown, a dark colour. But that's not the important part. The important part is, you feel such love.
Yeah.
You feel such love, and it's like it just frees you completely.
Why did God show you his presence?
I have never actually asked God why.
Do you talk to God?
Yes, like most people do in their prayers, and most people I would tell them to give out.
But he talks back to you in a way that maybe other people...
Yeah.
Literally answers you?
On very rare occasions.
Okay.
On very rare occasions.
You see, the reason I ask you about what God looked like is because I wonder if the angels can kind of tend to look like we have been told by the books what angels look like.
Yeah.
God looks like a version of what we are told Jesus or God looked like.
Yeah.
So, which might make people think, is this something that you are conjuring up from your subconscious, from things you've seen down the years, you know?
Well, I would just maybe partly to answer that would be, you know, the angels have taught me everything I know. You know, they have been my teachers, my companions, my best friends. I wouldn't be here today only for all of this.
Yeah.
You know, I was considered retarded. I couldn't read. And I still can't read very much, by the way. And even at the time when I said to, after Joe had died, I always remember Archangel Michael coming up behind me when I was wheeling my daughter home in her pram. This was years before he died, and just saying to me that, you know, he had a message. And I was getting annoyed because I was a mom and I was busy, and go away, leave me alone. And Archangel Michael just said he had a message from God, and that was that it was getting near time for you to write, and, you know, to write the first book. And I got so annoyed. I said, but how on earth can God even, you know, expect me even to write one book when I can't even read or write? Mm. Like, even to write my name then was very difficult, you know, in that way.
Can I ask you, to go back to your childhood then, And that awful word you use, which we don't really use anymore, but I guess that was the word.
That was the word you used.
And that was the word that people used about you.
Yeah.
And why was that?
It was because I didn't start to talk until much later in life. I think I was 2.5 or 3 years of age. And I think as well, because in Ireland way back then, they knew nothing about, you know, if a child was dyslexic, and I suppose they wouldn't have been able to recognize it then.
Okay.
And the doctors, you know, had branded me retarded to my parents as well. So, you know, it was nobody's fault really, but maybe it was God's plan all along, because how could I do what I'm doing now if it wasn't?
And you were also, would have been told at that point by the angels and everything, you've been seeing these since you were a small child, and you were told not to tell anyone about this.
Yeah, they were constantly reminding me to keep it a secret, you know, not to say a word. And as I got a little older, they even told me, you know, that I would be locked up or sent away if I did. So the angels were protecting me an awful lot. So I never said a word to anyone, not even my mom or my dad, no one at all.
Yeah.
But I always remember the day, maybe I was about 2.5 or 3. I had started to talk, or maybe I was a little older, playing in front of the fire with my brother. My dad had made wooden blocks and we were putting one on top of the other. And it was when, I always smile, but it was when our hands touched, it was like his went into mine or mine went into his. And I just felt such joy, and I laughed. And it was at that particular time that, again, the angels enforced that I must keep it a secret. But then they told me something else. They told me that my brother that I was playing with, who was older than me at this time, playing with the blocks, had died before I was born. And you have to remember, I was a young child.
Yeah.
You know, just remember this. And, you know, sometimes I would see my brother as an infant in my mom's arms when she was asleep in the chair. And a young child doesn't question things. And I never questioned things at all. It's all it's all normal for me. I don't know what's normal for you in that sense.
No, none of this is normal for me, Lorna, as you can guess, and I'm sure you've met. Yeah. Are you a very religious person?
In what way do you mean?
Well, this is what I mean. I mean, where does this intersect with, for example, have the Catholic Church passed any judgment on this? Have you had any interaction with them down the years?
Well, over the years, a lot of priests would support me around the world, not just in Ireland. Sometimes a priest might talk to the bishop and they find the bishop has all my books. After Angels in My Hair came out, and I started to more talk about the guardian angel, the Pope now is starting to talk about the guardian angel, reminding people that they have a guardian angel. To me, I have great faith. And when I give talks in different parts of the world, there mightn't be one Catholic there.
Mm.
They can be of all different faiths and none.
And the angels, I get the impression, are kind of multi-denominational, according to you as well, are they?
Yeah, because what would you say? I see the guardian angel with everyone, so I know everyone has a soul, that spark of light of God, regardless. And I see other angels, and on times I would see the soul of a loved one around someone as well. And I know religion in all aspects has right across the board done terrible things in the name of God. But when I was writing Angels in My Hair, that is one thing I had a conversation with God. I said I was very scared. I was very nervous. I said, people will laugh at me, jeer me. They will say I'm crazy, I'm mad. And I asked God, what will I call you? Do I call you Jesus or Allah or any of those other names that I've been hearing that God has called? And God turned around and just said to me, Lorna, what do you call me? And I always remember that, because I just looked and said, God, of course. And he said, use the word God, because God is universal.
Lorna, you use the term healer in the book. Can you heal people?
I don't say I heal. I just know that some people have got well, and I know others haven't. All I can do on anyone's behalf, when I do a talk, I give a blessing afterwards. I bless each person, individual, and all I can do is ask for you. It's like Noah was a young child that, you know, came to a talk in Germany. I was on tour. And I remember when he walked into the hall and I said to God and the angels, shall I go over? He came in with his mom and someone else and I was told no. And then, you know, the talk went on and questions and answers came. And then this young boy stood up and the whole room went silent. It was literally packed. And there was only eyes on this young boy. And I suppose part of the miracle was, you know, how did all of these people never see this young boy when he walked in or he was sitting there, because he was had a machine by his side. He had a special thing on his head, netting with holes and clips in it and wires coming down. And I said to him, Noah, he told me his name was Noah. And I said to him, you know, what is it? And he said, I don't have a question to ask. I just want to tell you, Lorna, my guardian angel is my best friend. But I knew he had something else to say. And I said to him, what else? And he said, Lorna, could you ask God for the gift of life? And again, just seeing the audience, you know, there was 750 people there, or 1,000. And just seeing them being so silent, and you could hear a pin drop. No one cleared their throat. No one moved. They just were all focused on this child. And they hearing him say, you know, can you ask God for the gift of life? How can I say this? It was like as if for the first time, all of the people there realized that they had the gift of life and this young boy hadn't. You know, and I said to him, All as I can do, and this is what I always say, is I can ask on your behalf, but that's all I can do. Now, Noah, God did take him home to heaven, but he gave Noah extra time. So he spent a lot of time here in Ireland with us.
You see, look, Lorna, yeah. I think you are a good, earnest person and everything, right? But, and I'm getting this in on texts.
Yeah.
But, like, we've all met people who have sick children. We've all met people who have lost hope, and they are desperate, and they will do and go anywhere, and they are ripe for exploitation. And I suppose there'd be a concern that what you're doing here is kind of preying on the desperate, giving hope to people who have no hope, who will grasp at anything. You understand what I'm saying, don't you?
I understand that, you know, and that is something that comes up all of the time, people saying that. But how would I say it? Like, when I have a young man standing in front of me, and, you know, maybe in the audience, and I'm already being told that this young man, you know, 18 or 19 years of age or 15 is, you know, thinking of taking his life because he sees no hope in the world. If I can give that young man hope and belief in himself and confidence, to me, that it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks in the world. And it doesn't matter. And that happens a lot.
And do you... do you charge people? Do people make donations to see
people,
you, or how does it work?
People do make donations, and I do workshops all around the world, and I'm doing some here. And there's usually an organizer. So it's not, I always say to the organizer, try and keep the price down as much as possible. And we do a, I think you call it like a scholarship as well. But I see a lot of extreme cases, and they're like that young man that I spoke about. They're like Noah. They're like, you know, a family that, you know, have lost everything, you know, and we try to help them, you know, or maybe there are other young people from other countries and their parents are so worried about them, you know, to help them to connect back to nature, to give them back belief. It's about helping others. It's not, you know, it's not about other things. We have to show more compassion in the world. That's what I believe.
Okay.
We have to show more love.
That would be the key message, yeah.
That is, it's to help others as much as possible and, you know, connect back spiritually. I know I use the word spirituality, but now we have well-being coming into schools. And again, that's the same. They're teaching children how to love, how to be kind, how to have empathy. And that's all in spirituality.
Yeah, okay.
There's things you can't buy.
So I mean, I think people will disagree or not with a lot of the story you tell. But I suppose ultimately nobody can argue with the message that more kindness, more empathy and more listening in the world is not a bad thing. Look, Lorna, it's an extraordinary book, and you are an extraordinary person. I still don't know what to make of it all, to be honest. But the book is called Angels in My Hair. It's published by Penguin Books. And Lorna Byrne, thank you so much for coming in to us today.
And thank you very much. It has been my pleasure. I have enjoyed every moment talking with you.
Thank you, Lorna. Okay.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.